All right, so I've been sending a thought a day and a podcast every other day, if you like that. Some people like it. Today, on Saturday morning, we have finished the book Up to More About Alcoholism. And the book spent all those pages, 43 pages, and the doctor's opinion, which is about 10 pages, to get us to understand what is our problem and to understand one word, powerless. And so I thought before we get to we agnostics, which is where the power is, and how our old ideas block us from the power, and then how it works, how we allow the power to work in our lives and unblock ourselves, starts with how it works and into action. So I copied this from the steps we took. I had carried this message, but I think the steps we took is a little bit better. They're both by Joe McHugh. I'd like you to turn to the last page, please. And there's this powerful paragraph that's quoted from the 12 and 12. And I wish people who come here the first day would remember this on day 30. Or 60, or 1 year, or 20 years. And it says, under the lash of alcoholism, I was driven to AA. And there I discovered the fatal nature of my situation. Then and only then do I become as open-minded to conviction, open-minded and willing to listen as the dying can be. I stand ready to do anything which will lift the merciless obsession from me. The lash of alcoholism, anybody felt it? Mm-hmm. Now today, I have the lash of self-centeredness, the lash of my self-centered nature. So I'm still under the lash of alcoholism today. And I'm driven to AA, and now I'm driven through AA to God. And I'm open-minded, and I'm willing to connect and listen to God today and turn away from myself. But in the beginning, did anybody remember the chaos that you're in and the terror? Anybody have terror when they came in here? And so under the lash of alcoholism, and here's the problem. We all, when we work with other people who are new, they forget how bad the lash is quickly. And once they do that, it's hard to work with them. They don't want to do anything. And then some people come here and the lash wasn't, they didn't get enough lashes. I mean, it's the only way to describe it. They got 10 lashes, it was pretty bad, but then after a week they say, well, it was only 10 lashes. And they must tell themselves I can handle 11 lashes. It's sad, it's why we die. And so I thought that would be a good way to start this. And then on the next to last page, I want to read this from Joe McHugh. I owe so much to this little black man from Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas. He met out with Charlie at an Al-Anon convention, I believe in 1979. And they loved the book and the steps, and they started communicating, and eventually that led to the Joe and Charlie workshop. One of their first workshops was actually in Wichita, I believe in 1980, and they gave them the 10 o'clock slot at night. And they talked about just the first four chapters of the book. And then they went to, they had the 30th or whatever year reunion, the international conference, and somebody passed out the Joe and Charlie tapes, and then it got known all over the world. And they really kept, they got me to understand that there's a program in this book, and without this program, I have no solution to my problem, and I need to do it. It changed my life, and we owe so much to them. And these three paragraphs here have so much information and a new way of looking at things that I hadn't seen before. It says, the exciting thing about the 12 steps is that they teach me how to live. And I didn't know how to live before. I lived, and I thought I did, but I made a mess of it. Once I know the design of living and the principles of living a successful life, I find that I will not only get over the problems I see, but I avoid many other problems I would have had. I think that's the two things. I don't get into as many problems as I used to, and when I get into them, I see where I'm the problem. To me, the miracle is that all this was boiled down into 12 simple steps which anybody can apply. These 12 steps are not written to alcoholics, they're written to the world. I believe God gave this book to the world with these spiritual principles so that if we turn to Him and we follow these, we'll be with Him. And we have to remember, people don't like it, some people don't, but this is a fundamental Christian program that started this group, Oxford Group. It's fundamental Christianity, practicing the principles laid out in Scripture so that people could connect to God and use these steps to practice. They couldn't practice Christianity well enough, so they started this group to try to do it together, and then they came up with the 6 steps. And so we don't talk about Christianity in our steps in the book, but these 12 steps were spiritual in nature. Bill W., when he wrote the 12 steps and how it works, the 3 pages, he tells the story. You can actually listen to him on the internet on one of his original speeches. He didn't know how to write the program. He had the 6 steps, and it was time to write how it works, and he didn't know how to do it. He wanted Reverend Shoemaker to do it, to write the steps. And Reverend Shoemaker says it has to be an alcoholic, has to write the book. And so he prayed. He describes how 11:30 at night he prayed, he put the pencil down, he prayed, meditated over this, and then he picked it up and he wrote the 3 pages, how it works. And he realized that he had 12 steps now instead of 6. And then his friend Hank Parkhurst came over and brought a new guy, and he showed it to Hank, and Hank said, "Well, there are only 10 commandments, and now we have 12 steps." So. Mm-hmm. And there was quite a bit of discussion about it, but we have it today. And I think it's changed my life. My idea in this book, which is the steps we took, is to talk about the steps and how they're the principles of living. Some people say you can't read this book because it's not AA-approved literature. I think tonight I'll send out on the link AA-approved literature and what that actually means. It's very misunderstood. But how they're the principles of living, the steadfast and never-changing universal laws. Now, I didn't think about that. Undoubtedly established by something beyond man. These principles that apply to human behavior, the 12 steps, are as dependable as the principles that govern physics. Now, think about that. And we say, if you thoroughly follow this path, right, you cannot fail. These are spiritual principles that if we follow them, we won't fail to get the results. So he says, sometimes we might imagine that just once water wouldn't freeze at 32 degrees, but no matter where we are, it always does, right? And he says, when God made water, he made a governing principle, and that principle is dependable because it's unchanging. And he says, the same is true of the principles that govern human behavior. Think about that. If we understand the principles which God has made to govern our lives, we can accomplish more and live better lives. And he says, yet most of us know more about the principles that govern nature than we do about the principles that govern our lives. And here's a really excellent paragraph. There are few people in our society who seem able or willing to teach us the principles. He says, I think the family and the church and all the institutions that could be teaching the principles stopped many years ago and started making rules. I was listening to that today when I was listening to somebody go through Romans 6 and 7. It's easier to give rules than it is to teach principles. But when you don't know the principles, you can't help but break the rules, sometimes all the rules. If you have the principles, you really don't need rules. That's what is great about the 12 steps. They aren't rules. We're a spiritual program. We have no rules. They're steps. They're dues. The 12 steps don't have don'ts. They have dues. And so we don't tell you what you don't do, but we tell you what we suggest you do. That's what principles are, guidelines for what to do, the 12 steps of principles to live by. And it says it comes down basically to surrender. Unconditional surrender, I talk about. The 12 steps teach us that successful living is being in harmony with God and our fellow man. because I was out of harmony with God and my fellow man when I came here. Anybody else? And it says, remember on page 77, we're going to put our lives in order, right? And we put our lives in order with God, ourselves, and man. And that's what the steps are designed to do. It's putting ourselves to maximum service to God and our fellow man. And that's the next line in page 77. It says, what is our real purpose? Our real purpose is to fit ourselves maximally to serve God and others. And then we get the rewards, harmony, happiness, contentment. So I think that's really powerful stuff. And C.S. Lewis, A Mere Christianity, the first 35 pages, it's a tough read. He was a brilliant man. But like Sandy Beach says, he describes how we all human beings forever, have had a moral code. There's something inside of us that knows what's right or wrong. And it was given to us. It's part of our nature. But then we turn away from it. But it's there. And the big book tells me, and we agnostics, which we're going to study next, is that it's deep down inside all of us, right? And it's available to all who seek Him. The highway is broad and all-inclusive, not exclusive, open to all who seek Him. And that's where I think AA gave something very powerful to the world. God is available to all of us. What is the problem? Now, the problem for me has changed. In fact, it's changed recently. I see the problem differently than I did last year, a year ago, or 10 years ago. And we'll talk about it. We can become so caught up in a problem that all we can see to do is to try harder. So we're going to try harder to fix it. And try to get the wrong method to bring the right results by doing it harder. Did anybody try harder to do better, to live better? And wake up and say, I'm not going to do something today. I'm going to do differently. I'm going to act differently. Step one tells us we'd better stop and name the problem and become willing to admit defeat before we rush in to fix things. And I think that's one of the mistakes that sometimes I make with new people is that they have to understand the problem. I have to understand the problem. And I have to admit defeat to the problem before I can rush in to fix it. Because I have to admit defeat that I can't fix it. And so let's see what he says about this, and then we'll open it up for some. The truth is that many of the problems we have in life we can't fix. Anybody believe that's true? I think that is true. Now, one of the things is I decide what a problem is. So there are a lot of problems in life that I decide are problems that I can't fix. And isn't that what the Serenity Prayer is all about? Deciding what we can accept and what we can change. He's going to talk about that. We are powerless over a whole lot of things. And step one is about being powerless, about not being able to fix everything. It's simple. Sometimes we have to say, I can't fix it. Now we're going to spend 43 pages in Doctor's Opinion to remember that we have no defense against the first drink. Powerless. No defense. And then on page 44, they describe, again, how we're powerless. Lack of power is our dilemma. And then on 45, they tell us we have to find the power greater than ourselves, which will solve our problem. And then it says the book tells us how to do that. Throughout our lives, we find ourselves powerless in certain situations. Now, powerless means no power. It means I can't push my car and make it move. Now, I think what happens to some of us, maybe myself at times, is I'm powerless over 99% of the things. But I think I have power over the 1%. So then I'll try to fix that, and I make a mess of it. So my powerless has to be 100%, especially my powerless over alcohol. And I'm powerless in two ways in AA. I'm powerless over alcohol, and I'm powerless over my self-centeredness. That's the second part of our lives are unmanageable by me. And so I'll never have power over my self-centeredness again. That's what I recognize lately. I always try to do better. I pray. I say the third step prayer. I want to stay close to God. I want to stay on the right-hand side. But as I've gone further in the program, I have no power. I have no power to get on the right-hand side except through God. And what I have to admit all day long is I'm powerless. I'm over on the left-hand side. God, please, give me the power. Change me over to the right-hand side. That's why we practice our character defects, because it's part of our nature. And I can't stop doing that without God. Now, what AA has given me is I recognize when I'm on the left-hand side and I don't feel good. And so once I've worked the steps, I understand when I feel good, I'm with God, and when I don't feel good, I'm not. And so I recognize that, and then I ask God, I turn to God and tell him, please, I let go, change me. That's what we're supposed to do all day long. Throughout our lives, we find ourselves powerless in certain situations. We're powerless over other people. Anybody believe that? I had to recognize that this morning at 7:30. A lot of us are like the guy who doesn't realize that he is powerless over his coworkers. And realizing you're powerless over other people gives me a lot of power, because then I don't have to waste so much time on other people and how they are and just accept them. He goes to work day after day, year after year, trying to change them. Anybody trying to change anybody in your life? This foolishness may go on for 25 years, or he may lose his job because of it, but he goes there 8 hours a day trying to straighten those people out. If he would admit that he is powerless, the situation might get better. He might see the people differently. Isn't that what freedom from anger is? Understanding we have no power over other people, see them differently, see them as possibly spiritually ill like me, or just that's the way they are. It was insanity for me that I tried for 16 years in every way I could to drink normal. Anybody try to do that? All I had to do was admit that I couldn't do it. So if I admit I can't drink normally, okay. And then I have to admit that I can't keep from drinking. Those are the two parts of our powerlessness. What is this insanity? What is this drive within us that makes us want to try to do what we cannot, whether it's drinking or using or controlling others? And he says the things that make us insane is self, self-will and self-reliance. And I've thought about that. What I do is I create a world that's not real, in which I'm the center of it and I'm in charge of it, and I'm trying to do things that I don't have any power to do. And Chuck C. says, that's my only problem, is my conscious separation from God. I put myself in a world that isn't real. And the thing is, I didn't know it wasn't real. That's why I say the set aside. Let me let go of my old ideas all the time. And so if I live in this world that's not real, I think I have power in it. And then I try to do things and fix it, and I make a mess of it. It says, Jesus may have been teaching the principle of the first step when he said, deny thyself. He meant give up on yourself is the answer, give up on self-reliance. And remember, we're willing to do as only drowning men. With the desperation of drowning men, we reach up and we see the reed is the flimsy reed is the hand of God. And we have to understand that we're drowning and reach up to God. And the more we reach, the stronger the hand gets. And the further we get out of the water. And so we tend to forget that sometimes. And it says, deny yourself, deny my self-centeredness, deny that I have any power to fix this. It sounds pretty simple, but it really has to be really, really, really conceited. Remember, the first step is to concede your innermost self that you're alcoholic. Concede that you can't drink like other people. You can't change what you are. We say every meeting, I'm an alcoholic. Well, what does that mean? I'm powerless over myself and powerless over alcohol. And I need God, and I need a relationship with God. And if I have that God, then I have power in my life. If I don't, I don't. His wife used to save her green stamps until she could get the premiums from the green stamp store. It never failed. Now, this is really good. Everything she brought home had to be put together. Now, people say, how do you know if you're an alcoholic? Well, I'm going to tell you in a minute. It says, now these things always come with clear instruction, principles, telling you step by step how to put whatever it was together. They're ABC instructions. So simple, they would insult a person of my intelligence. Now, alcoholics, you can tell if you're alcoholic if you buy something and it has instructions and you don't look at it. Think about it. I always put the instructions over here. Then I make a mess of it. And then I have to get the instructions. It never failed that I would throw them in the garbage can and proceed to do it my way. After a while, I would be mad and frustrated trying to do it my own way and without instructions. As soon as I'd see my wife looking the other way, I'd dig the instructions out of the eggshells and coffee grounds and lure myself to follow the principles until I got things put together. Now think about it. You get the instructions, and immediately you're going to look at it. So it's telling me that I'm in charge. I know what's best. And that got me here. That got me a seat in AA. When I'm trying to put something together, I may be trying to drive a tapered peg into a wrong hole end first. But I keep hammering and hammering. But the thing won't go. I drive and force it. Maybe I'll finally look at the peg and say, this peg won't go that way. Then I'll turn it around. But I can't turn it around until I admit that I've been trying to do it the wrong way. What we do in AA, what we're supposed to tell others is, you come here, okay, you got here, you got a seat. Now you got to give up on all your plans for fixing this. They can't be your plans. Your plans are never going to work. So AA has this book, and they get to page 43, and they're telling us, your plans won't work. Now we're going to give you new plans. And then they're going to tell you, we agnostic, your plans has to involve a power greater than you. And then on how it works, they're going to tell you, this is the plan that'll work, because it's not your plan. Now, if you take any part of these 12 steps and you make it your steps and you change it, it may not work for you. I won't say it won't work, because then somebody will try to prove it, but it may not work. So AA is an experiment. They say, you come here, your plan never worked. Give up on your plan and try this and tell us what happened. And it's hard to give up on your plan completely. It says, of course, as long as I persist in taking wrong actions, I'm going to get wrong results. Now, I see that every day, don't you? Whenever you get back in the self, you start judging, you get impatient, intolerant, then you're going to take wrong actions. And I like this, if nothing changes, nothing changes. And so I need a personality change sufficient to overcome alcoholism. And I can't change my personality, so it has to come from something beyond me. I have to admit that I was doing it wrong and turned the peg around before I can accomplish what I want to. As long as your mind tells you that's the way it goes, you can't do anything else. Somebody can be standing beside you saying, hey, turn that around, but you can't do differently. We get so caught up in a problem that all we can do is to try harder. And we get up in solving other people's problems too, in codependency, it's the same way. We get so involved. To try to get the wrong method to bring the right results by doing it harder. As we do this, we persist because we want to be control and self-reliant. We don't want to admit defeat. So a lot of people admit defeat, they can't drink and they paralysis over alcohol, but I have to admit defeat in running my life, in my way of life, my plan all the time. And so I have to watch all day in step 10. We're going to talk about that tomorrow night for when my plan's coming up. And remember, it says in the morning, you make your plans for the day, right? They know that's wrong. So they say, stop and ask God to direct your thinking, divorcing it from selfish design and self-centered motives. And so it's good not to have a plan or a way or a position. It's hard to do, but that's our goal. It says we humans are not meant to depend on our individual selves. We're meant to rely on each other. God didn't intend for us to be self-reliant. We are designed, as our principles spell out, to rely on each other, and we're designed to rely on God. And then God works through people, right? We want to be self-propelled, but we can't be. Human beings surely aren't capable of operating without energy from God and from each other. In step one, we're giving up on being self-propelled, self-directed, and self-reliant. So I was thinking about how do we rely on each other? Well, in the beginning, if you didn't rely on each other, you would never survive the mastodons and the cold and all of that. And now, how do we rely on each other? Anybody think they're self-reliant today? Well, did they put gas in their car? How'd the gas get there? Did they eat food? How'd the food get on their table? I mean, we're all so reliant on each other in a society for our natural instincts of life. Another part of our insanity is our blindness to reality. I really like the story. I didn't understand that it was. That'll give you a laugh. The story is told of a guy who had two horses. He had two horses. He's worried he couldn't tell them apart. So he decided to crop one's tail, and he said that worked for a while, but the tail grew back. Then he thought he would mark one's horse's hooves with chalk, and that worked for a while until the horse walked through water. finally, he told his son, he says, "Son, I finally figured out how to tell the 2 inches apart. The white one is 4 inches taller than the black one." Now think about that. Isn't that true of us when we come in here? Isn't it true today when we see certain things a certain way and we think that we have a situation, a problem? But there's two ways of looking at it, and we have to see the reality of it. It says, once we give up on any problem, and realize we're powerless over it, then we can make changes in ourselves. So when I'm powerless over something, I have to change the way I look and see and act towards it. But we can't make any changes in ourselves until we see that we're powerless. That is really the key, until I realize I'm powerless over a situation. Whatever it is, we begin to believe. And we can see the need to make new decisions or make changes. So remember, step two says we came to believe. Coming to believe when I'm powerless, that there is a power greater than me that can solve my problem. And I won't ever really come to believe that till I really believe it, until I understand my powerlessness. And does anybody have a bad day, bad couple days, in a lot of pain, a lot of things going bad? Well, it's because I understand I'm powerless over what I see, and I'm powerless to change it, and I don't like it. I heard it, we had a meeting on unfair. Who decides it's unfair? You see, I decide something's unfair. God doesn't say, this is unfair, Michael, get upset. It's just a situation. I put labels on things, and when I put labels on things, then I think I have power to change it. And so I have to stop putting labels on things and stop trying to change things as they are. Isn't that what the serenity of prayer is all about? And here he's going to talk about it. Admitting our powerlessness is how we accept that we do have a problem and begin to discover what the problem is. In some cases, we're going to find out that there's a better action to take rather than do it the wrong way, right? Courage to change, or courage to accept. Sometimes it's really hard. And here he makes the point, if it's your children or your spouses, it's very hard to admit or accept. That's the hardest area to practice these principles in our lives. In either way, whether we take a better action or admit there's nothing we can do about it, isn't that the serenity prayer? We're on the road to recovery. Now, the serenity prayer, I used to think that I'm going to wake up and I'm going to decide what I'm going to change and have courage to accept, right? Well, I missed the whole point of the serenity prayer. I can't see the reality of the situation without God. I have to ask God for the serenity. Serenity to me is the ability in a calm, undisturbed place, not in self, to see the situation. And so in step one, there is twofold, to name the problem and admit defeat. And even when we're just willing to say it doesn't fit that way, but I can turn it around, even that simple statement is admitting defeat. Now, one of the things we're supposed to do in AA is we're supposed to have people, help people see how they're defeated by their experience and our experience, and then we offer a solution. And then that solution, hopefully, they'll want to have the solution. It says, if you want what we have and are willing to go any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And we say, without help, alcohol is too powerful, remember? But there is one who has power. That one is God. May you find him now. So if you're powerless, the preamble basically is telling you the whole thing, the first three things we read every morning. You're powerless over alcohol. You're screwed. If you want what we have, then you'll do what we do. And you have to go to any length, and then here's the program of recovery, and it involves God. It's not that complicated. We read it every meeting. And I think I'm going to stop there and pick up with the rest of the chapter next week. So I'll give time for people to talk and discuss this. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.